You're listening to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Mazingo. Just a brief introduction on myself. I was a 15th round draft pick by the New York Mets in the 2003 MLB draft. And I was a 6th round pick by the Kansas City Royals in the 2006 MLB draft. I spent 6 seasons pitching professionally, and now I own Mazingo Baseball. And I am very excited to welcome y'all to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Enjoy. All right, welcome back to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Today's guest is Seth Coltervolts. He is in his first season as the pitching coach at VCU. So Seth, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah, so look, we're going to talk about your journey here leading to VCU. Well, both journeys leading to VCU. We're going to start with the coaching side. So you obviously played at VCU, and you when you graduated, you stayed on as the volunteer assistant, and then went to UT Martin and Wofford for 5 seasons. Is that correct?
Yep, that's right. So I stayed on upon graduation. I stayed on for 2 years with Coach Stifler, Jeff Palumbo, Kurt Elbin, and myself, and then went to UT Martin with Rick Robinson and Rick Guarno for 2 seasons, and then transferred over to Wofford, where I was there with Todd Indonato and J.J. Edwards for 5 years, and this fall, essentially the whole fall, so 5.5 years.
Nice, and now back in the Bay Richmond, Virginia, VCU.
That's right, back home. This is actually where I'm from as well, so.
Yeah, so you're a product of Henrico High School, correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, super cool. So, exactly, right back where you're from. So, while at VCU, we got to talk about some of those accolades, because I can't just pretend like you're a pitching coach here. You're a pretty good pitcher in the day, right? So, if I have this all correct, from my records here, when you graduated, you were in the top 10 in VCU's career history in appearances, starts, complete games, and second all-time in innings pitched, all conference, all tournament team, just a complete stud at VCU, right?
Yeah, I appreciate it. My self-deprecating comment is, like, it's an odd combination. You have to be good enough for them to keep you out there, but bad enough to not get drafted, and then bad enough to where they don't mind using you, you know, through your pitch counts and all that stuff. They'll keep you out there. Well, you don't have a future, so we'll keep him out there.
Come on,
weird combo to get some of those stats, but I appreciate it.
No. Don't do that. Don't take the credit away from yourself.
All right,
so let's talk about, before we really get into your role as a pitching coach now, let's talk about your journey to VCU as a player. So we talked off the air about sort of how different the landscape is today versus what it was when you and definitely I came through. So you graduated VCU in what year?
12.
Okay, so 2012. So really not that long ago, right? 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
And the landscape, the dynamic of everything has changed so rapidly. So I want to talk about your journey to get to VCU. How did that all play out? How did you end up at VCU?
Yeah, so I was playing at Henrico High School, and I was having an effective career playing the travel ball circuit, which it was later than, you know, it wasn't as early as it is now from a recruiting standpoint. So it really didn't matter who you were playing with, you know, when you were 15 years old. It wasn't that important. And going into my junior summer, which was kind of the summer, I had been recommended by what became actually a lifelong friend of mine, who was also committed to VCU. I'd been recommended by him to play with his travel ball team, the Tidewater Orioles, with Lee Banks. And that gave me the opportunity, you know, I agreed upon doing that, and that gave me the opportunity to get a little more exposure, which sounds odd considering I went to college in my hometown, but you know, got some more interest and made the recruiting process a little more competitive for me. But that summer with Lee Banks on the Orioles was a big piece of it.
Yeah, so shout out to Banksy. So as you know, I played for his teams as well in high school. They were the Tidewater Mets at the time, but just those teams, at least back then, I haven't kept up with it as much as I probably should. But back then, man, those teams were absolutely loaded. And Lee did a phenomenal job with that organization.
Very true. Very true. Yeah, he's awesome.
So during that recruiting process, did you kind of always know you wanted to go to VCU? Just run me through it. What other colleges were out there? You don't have to tell me exactly specifically who, but were there other colleges that you were very interested in that didn't come along, or other ones that made the decision very tough?
I'll tell you, I think the first letter, because it used to be you get letters in the mail, maybe a recruiting questionnaire. Like
right.
That was really cool to get. I remember I got one from Kentucky, and I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be a Wildcat. I'm doing it. Like, I was in love with it. As a 16-year-old, you don't really understand that everybody's getting those letters to a certain extent. But did the camp circuit and all those things, and then when it really came down to it, it was three or four schools in the state of Virginia. And I had always told myself I didn't want to stay in Richmond. You know, I wanted to branch out, and I was a pretty independent guy. I wanted to try something new. And, you know, ultimately, when it came down to it, and I think this is the case for a lot of guys that go to VCU, is like, I just wanted to win. And I really, really was obsessed with winning games, and VCU gave me a really good opportunity to do that. So, when it all came down to decision-making, I mean, Coach Stifler was great, and Coach Keyes, they were both great. But I just wanted to win, man. I wanted to win championships, and I thought that was my best opportunity to be around that type of culture and those players.
Yeah, and then as a pitcher, it wasn't a bad little spot to see how big the diamond was either, right?
Yeah, no doubt. I've been to that. I've been there. They moved the fences in, by the way. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Yeah. Hey, Coach Schiffer didn't tell me that until after I accepted the job here. So then just, hey, the fences are, they moved them in. But yeah, to get to your point, yeah, you go to the Richmond Braves games back then, and you notice how hard you had to hit it to get out of there.
Yeah, and then you actually get in there playing. You're like, man, the ball does not carry at all here with college players, right? Like, you gotta be very strong to get one out of here. So, yeah, this works. Go get me some speedy outfielders, and we can run down some fly balls out there, right? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I will defend myself. You know, you and I both pitched in the hot bat era. So, the year after I finished pitching, they did switch the bats. That helped them a little bit, were the hot bats, but it is tough to get out of there.
Yeah, yeah. So, we actually, when I was at VCU, we actually couldn't play at the Diamond one year. We had to travel to Petersburg for all our home games.
That's right.
Petersburg was not the funnest place for pitchers to play. Anyways, so let's talk about, we mentioned how different things are today. So now, everyone knows their velocities nonstop. We live in like a velocity-driven world when it comes to pitching, right? That definitely wasn't the case when I was coming along. I shouldn't say it wasn't the case. Everyone was still, like, scouts were still evaluating you off of it. College coaches obviously knew, but it wasn't prevalent. Like, we didn't pitch in a game and know our velocity. I remember the first time I knew a velocity, I pitched in a showcase, and literally 3 months later, the results got posted on the internet, which was dial-up internet that I had to wait 5 minutes for it to load. So it wasn't like now. Guys will throw, and a second and a half later, or not even a second and a half, half a second later, they know their velocity. So how different, since your time as the volunteer guy at VCU to now, how much change have you seen, and what are the challenges that come along with that in terms of recruiting these guys when with velocity being so prevalent?
I'll start by saying, for the most part, and before I get to the velocity point, for the most part, I think the biggest change is there are less secrets in recruiting. There are less secrets. There's less Harold Mazingos out there that, you know, someone saw because of, you know, geographically or because of connections, and no one else saw. And I'm making a huge assumption on your recruiting process. But, you know, there's less guys that you kind of find that people don't know about because – you can just throw it on Twitter and everybody knows, you know. The other thing I'll say is Perfect Game and PBR are phenomenal resources. Like the ability to go, you know, Perfect Game's ability to track innings pitched and, you know, how effective they've been and at bats and, you know, how, you know, extra base hits and walks and things like that is really good intel to help us make better decisions. And then PBR, you know, I mean, they're at the point where they're getting TrackMan reports on guys and you're able to see the analytical side of things. So they both have helped the recruiting process tenfold. With the velocity, gosh, it's crazy. You know, if I had, if I were to do this at UT Martin 8 years ago and you had a high school 16-year-old, you know, let's call him a junior in high school, and he was 86, 88 with a breaking ball, that's a no-brainer. You know, you got to go check him off to make sure he's not throwing it off the backstop or he's a real human being. But that's, you know, that's a great opportunity, a great addition to you. Now it's just different. You know, the threshold has risen when it comes to velocity. So you're getting a lot of, we get a lot of video, which is a great thing. Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest and best impacts of COVID from a recruiting standpoint is guys are more sensitive to how much video they need. And that allows us to get more looks at them, you know, because ultimately we're trying to build trust in our decisions. And we want to go see you pitch. And then there's still the aspect of seeing you pitch in game. But the more we get to see you, the better, the more comfortable we get, the more we trust it. So the video has been great. And I know I'm giving you a roundabout answer here. So, but with the velocity, it's just the threshold has risen, man. Like 86, 88 isn't what it used to be in the recruiting process. And there's just more things, you know, we just add on more things to look at to separate people.
Yeah, no, so that's probably a perfect answer to lead into the next part. Well, before I do, maybe you can remind me of this. I've got you mentioned my recruiting process. I've got a really funny story I could share with you. I'm not sure if it's for this podcast or not, but just remind me at some point. I'll tell you. With recruiting, this is one thing that I fight a little bit. So me being in the private sector where I have a training facility, right, we do sort of try to optimize to make people more appealing for college coaches, if that makes sense. I'm not meaning that you, I both know, everyone in the arena should know that just metrics alone isn't what it's going to take, right? But
right.
A guy that knows what he's doing at 82 is very different than a guy that knows what he's doing at 92, right? It just is what it is. So one of the things that I sort of fight, and I really hate the idea of old school, new school stuff. I'm not going to get into that, but one of the things that I fight is that when I talk about velocity being a big deal, it gets sort of negated a lot as in, oh, it doesn't matter if people can't throw it across the plate, which to me is like, well, no kidding. Like, that's baseball 101. If you can't throw it over the plate, you're not any good to anybody, right? So what the thing that I try to tell people, and you're in this arena, so you can answer this better than I can, but I just kind of want affirmation, I guess, at this point. The thing that I tell people is that, like, think of velocity as just a checkbox, right? Like, and it has to be checked off. They're really, unless you're throwing knuckleballs or throwing submarine or some funky left-handed delivery, if you don't check off that box, nothing else is going to matter. But that box alone also isn't going to get you to where you need to be, right? It's just one part of the process. That kind of the way you view it as well?
It's a great way to put it. Yeah, it gets you in the door for sure. You know, it gets your foot in the door in recruiting. You show that you can throw. You got a certain level of arm talent or arm speed that helps you, you know, helps you get on the radar. It's a great way to put it. It's a box that has to be checked.
All right, so I'm going to put you on the spot here a little bit. So I talk to a lot of college coaches because I don't mean that to toot my own horn. I mean that to say, like, I try as hard as I can for the guys that I train. I fight for them nonstop. And I don't mean fight for them in a sense of, hey, I've got this kid throwing 82. I'm going to tell you he's throwing 92. I don't mean that. I have realistic talks with the guys about what level they can or cannot play at. A kid throwing 79 to 82 is not playing at Division I level. It's just not happening, right? But I do have these talks with college coaches, and the one thing that sort of baffles me today, and I'm going to get your take on this, is that I don't work with a pitching staff, so to speak, right? I don't get to see guys on the field. And the coaches that know that I work with guys, they'll reach out to me and ask me these questions. And the one thing I'm always quick to tell them is, listen, just understand, I'm going to tell you what I can, but understand I work with these guys in a controlled environment. It's very different than in the games. I would encourage you to talk to their high school coaches who have a better relationship and can answer some of those questions. Now, I know, and I hate to do this to some of these high school coaches, but because I think they should be commended for what they do, but I know that oftentimes they're not the most knowledgeable on the tools that scale for the next level. They are consumed with what wins at the high school level. So I get that. But how important do you think it is to talk to the on-the-field coaches versus just people in the training environment when it comes to recruiting kids?
Incredibly important. And to be honest with you, 90% of that conversation, if not more, is going to be about intangibles.
Exactly. Yeah, good.
Leadership, work ethic, when does he show up to practice, what's he do in the weight room. Because, you know, it's really our job to evaluate talent. And we're going to, you know, we're going to evaluate what we need to evaluate. But the things that we can't see is what we need all the information on. And usually you get that the most from the high school realm because, you know, they spend the most time with them. But that changes a little bit because these travel ball teams now are taking week-long trips together. And that environment has changed for sure. But, you know, if you ask Banks about me and the Orioles, he'd be like, well, shows up every week on time and pitches his three innings. You know, like he didn't have a good feel for my work ethic or how I was as a teammate or as a leader. But those high school coaches get that.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's about as perfect of an answer as I could have hoped for there. Because I think what you're talking about is so important. It's not – so it drives me crazy. I just say it like that. When I tell some of these coaches, like, hey, look, here's his high school coach, call him, and they never call the high school coach. You know, they'll call the travel ball coach and or the showcase coach, and I get that there's value to that. But like you just mentioned, there's things that, I would want to know that only the high school coach can really answer, the things that you're talking about. So I love that answer. Love it. So let's lead into the next part of this. When it comes to the training of everything, or I shouldn't say the training, but the necessarily the look. When we talk about the word projectable, can you sort of clarify what that sort of means to you? That way I'm not the one just sharing the same information over and over again.
In relation to a pitcher specifically?
So we're talking about pitcher specifically. So we talked about the velocity being a checkbox, right? And projectability is certainly another one, right? So I'm going to let you kind of run with that a little bit.
Yeah, so our job, part of our job is to measure, and I like to use the phrase ceiling and basement. You know, how high, the higher the basement, the better, the higher the ceiling, the better. So that is something we looked at in terms of projectability. You can, you know, we can break down the delivery and the size. You know, I love the movie Moneyball, and you know what they talk about, that kind of some of the Billy Bean things that he looks into is they projected on him a lot, and there were some things that they missed on, which is part of projecting. But we can look at arms and see how clean is the arm, how deep is the arm swing, you know, how good is the separation. Sometimes the levers, that's why people say taller the better, which is, you know, point of contention at times, but levers at times can help projectability. But my job, you know, projection doesn't pitch. Projection doesn't pitch. The guys that perform pitch. So my job is to make sure we have high basements. And there's sometimes that we can make a move on guy with a low basement and a high ceiling because of the way our roster is filtering out and our pitching staff's filtering out. Like, you need those guys because sometimes they can be your best players. But at the same time, I think balancing the projection with the baseline or the basement is what my job is, a big part of my job is.
No, look, so I sort of, again, I hate to just agree with everything you're saying, right? But I love the answers that you're giving. So it's an interesting concept. I've had conversations with some of these kids in the past, and I'm not going to go down a JUCO route here, but some of the players when I work with them, I've told them, like, look, like, you're a better fit for a JUCO level than you are the Division I level. And saying that, you're also closer to professional baseball than you are Division I baseball. And that has to sound like the weirdest concept in the world, right? But it's real. And I need people to understand that, I guess. So when I'm talking about that, I'm talking about the kids that have a very high ceiling, but have a very low, I guess you're calling it basement, right? A very low basement, right? Like, you're not very good, but your tools are off the chart, right? Your projectability is off the chart. In a few years, you have a chance to be really, really special, right? But you're not good enough at pitching to go help someone who's worried about winning. And that's not to say JUCOs aren't worried about winning. That's not what I meant. Hopefully nobody takes it that way. I just meant that there's a little bit more, I don't want to say development, but you understand what I'm saying. I'll leave that topic alone before somebody messes up my words. Yes, there you go. That's a much better way of saying it than what I was getting ready to say. So we'll leave it at that. So when winning becomes a factor, right, which it absolutely matters at the Division I level, and especially at a program like a VCU, right?
Yep.
You can't just come in there with off the chart tools and no skill, right? Like, you have to have that blend of both. And the pendulum can swing a little bit there, right? Especially for younger guys. I love the answers that you're giving. So I said I was gonna save this story, but I can't get it off my mind. So I'm gonna go ahead and share it, because I also think this is an important thing to talk about. One of the things that parents have a hard time grasping is the idea of scholarships, right? So people generally think when their kids are younger that, oh, I'm gonna get a scholarship, meaning full ride, right?
Sure.
And baseball isn't quite set up that way, right?
No, it's not.
And we're talking about the Division I level now. So it's I don't know what the right word is, but there's 11.7 scholarships to hand out. How many players?
Well, that's changing currently, but 27, right? 27 right now.
Okay.
You can have up to 27 on scholarship currently.
Yeah, perfect. So that's just do the math there. That doesn't allow for everyone to be on a full scholarship, right? Very few players in college baseball, I think it's safe to say, very few players in college baseball have a full ride athletically to college, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So, you were talking about me and the secret stuff. You were trying to take a jab at me, I believe, and say that I was from out in the boondocks. No one was going to know anything about me, but that's okay. So, I also had no knowledge whatsoever of the recruiting process. I think back then it was July 1st, June 1st, July 1st is when they could start talking to you or calling you on the phone. Is that right?
Yep.
All right, so I was getting calls that July 1st or whatever it was. So I'm talking to people. I always wanted to go to VCU. VCU was the school I wanted to go to, so that was kind of easy for me, right? VCU came to the house. I guess I could share this. VCU came to the house to my house to do some recruiting, and Coach Keys was there, and Stifler wasn't there yet, so McQueen was there, and Nugget, not Coach Haynes, he wasn't there at the time, but Nugget, Coach Nugget was there, so all three of them came, and at the end of the night, they were there for a couple hours, and at the end of the night, they offered me an 85% scholarship, okay? Yes, and I thought it was a slap in the face. I had no idea. So, like, I'm looking at them dumbfounded, like, did you really just offer me 85%? I was like, I can't believe this, right? Like, I want to come to VCU, and you didn't even offer me a full ride. Like, what is this, right? So, I told them I really didn't have any visits lined up, because back then we could only take three, I believe. So, I really didn't have any other visits lined up, but, like, the next day I set one up, and I was going to set up one more, but... So I'd set up this visit, and I was at the Commonwealth Games that weekend.
Nice.
Yeah, so the Commonwealth Games, I don't know how big of a deal they are now, but they were a huge deal back then. And I loved it. It was an awesome environment. So I'm at that, and I come in relief to pitch. They bring me in with the bases loaded and nobody out. And the first batter I face is a kid with the last name of Bocock, who ends up playing in the big leagues for a little bit, out of Turner Ashby. He pops up on the infield, and I strike the next two batters out. So after that game was over with, so we won. It was a one-run game, so now we won, right? So after that game was over with, I'm walking by in the stands. I'm walking by all these college coaches that usually talk to me, and no one's talking to me. And I'm like, man, like, what did I just do? Like, what did I do wrong, right? And I can't find my parents. And I happen to look back underneath the, I don't know, back in the back somewhere underneath the pavilion thing, and my parents are sitting with all the VCU coaches. So I go over there, and they essentially say, all right, you've earned your full ride. And I just committed on the spot. Like, perfect, yeah, let's go. But honestly, at that point, I still had no idea that 85% was a good thing. And I didn't learn that until I got to college. Like, what? Yeah. You're not on full ride? Like, what?
And now you gotta sit here and tell parents you're not gonna get a full ride unless you're as good as I
was. Right, exactly. So yeah, so I feel like, you know, yeah, I feel like the little spoiled kid now. Like, oh yeah, I got a full ride, but you ain't getting one. No, yeah. But no, I just had no idea. And so now, because of that, I do try to educate the parents as much as possible on the concept of what college recruiting looks like. So yeah. Let's talk slightly about what are some of the other things that you kind of look for, and what are some of the things that you feel are your best attributes, if you will, in terms of development once guys are at college. I guess let's just take it from there. Anything else you want to talk about recruiting, and then talk about development while at college, like what role that has?
So those do blend a little bit, because I think you're going to recruit, at least in my mind, you're going to recruit based on what you can and cannot coach, or what you can and cannot develop. And not that, you know, not that there's one thing you cannot develop and one thing you can develop, but there's things you're better at than others. So with that being said, some things that we all take into account: how you are as a teammate, and if you're, you know, showing people up, umpires, you know, coaches, things like that. I don't want to make that sound like it's not important, but I feel like everybody will tell you that. Some things that we pay attention to very specifically are how often you can square the catcher up. So, you know, let's just draw a little box between his knees and his elbows when he's catching, you know, assuming we're catching on 2 feet instead of one knee, but you get the point. How often you can square him up. Can you command an off-speed pitch? Can you command two off-speed pitches? And then I like to evaluate, like, general hand speed. So, like, can you maintain hand speed in 3-ball counts? Can you maintain hand speed with your off-speed? I think those are traits that are, you know, they're all coachable. Everything's coachable. But I think those are traits that can separate you in the recruiting process, at least, you know, in our eyes.
Oh, perfect. So something else I just thought of: how do you evaluate competitiveness, if that makes any sense? How do you evaluate that? What are the things you're looking at there?
It's so funny you say that, because that's been a topic of conversation with our guys and our pitchers, and I've been talking to them about that. Yeah, I think 90% of competitiveness, I have no opportunity to evaluate, because it's mental. You know, it doesn't. If you yell and scream, that doesn't make you more or less competitive than the guy who doesn't. If you fist pump, it doesn't make you more or less competitive than the guy that doesn't. You know, if you sprint in and off the dugout, if you carry your pitch count, you know, 110 pitches, which is out of the normal at this point, that doesn't really make you more or less competitive than the next guy. So it is very difficult. What I tell our guys is, you can measure body language. You know, there's not a scale for it. You know, there's not a, like a you get a demerit for each time you look down or put your head down or something. But you can measure body language overall. And then what I tell our guys is, like, the only thing that I can really truly evaluate outside of the body language is if you stay at max hand speed. Like, can you stay at max hand speed when things aren't going well? Can you stay at max hand speed when you're behind in the count? And that lets me know that you're being aggressive. And I think being aggressive is part of being competitive.
Oh, I love it, love it, love it, love it, love it. So we're going to shift and talk just one last brief topic, the art of pitching itself, right? So are there certain things, what I mean by certain things, like winning or first pitch strikes or winning the 1-1 counts, are there certain things that, in your opinion, lead to more successful pitching than not doing? If that makes any sense?
Yeah, for sure. You know, we talk to our guys about the controllables that we think make them difficult to score against. And, you know, we keep up with those controllables. And again, they are controllables. You know, it's not spin rate. It's not velocity. And we mentioned, like, all that is very important. It's not how tall you are or how old you are. We talk about those controllables. But I think to answer your question quickly, is how quickly you get to two strikes. So I think winning the 1-1 count is not the right language, because if you go strike, it's like, well, I didn't even get into a 1-1 count, you know?
Yep.
I'd much prefer you go strike.
Absolutely.
But
yep.
How quickly you can get to two strikes is, if I had to take all the things that we measure, it's the most indicative to not allowing runs.
No, I love it. I love it. I love it. So one of the things that I've been trying to drive home to some of the players that I'm working with is the idea of, look, I know everyone, like, has this major fear of, if I throw the ball over the middle of the plate, it's going to get hit for a home run, right? Like, you don't have to think that way. Like, go steal the 0-0. Hitters usually don't swing at it anyways, right? Like, they want to get comfortable up there for a little bit. You know what? And what I mean by that is, I'm not telling everybody to go throw the ball middle, first pitch every time. But what I mean by that is, you don't have to try to get, like, you don't have to throw a pitch on the outside black on 0-0 all the time where you're missing and yanking, you know, 2 inches to the left and now it's ball one. If you're going to, like, have a miss zone in place, and if you're going to miss back over the middle on 0-0, it's going to be okay. Just get ahead and then stay ahead, right? Like, that's kind of the...
The miss zone, that's such a good term. I might steal that from you. I'll give you some credit a couple times, and then it'll just be mine here in the next month or two. But I love the miss zone and understanding. And part of our system as a pitching staff, to elaborate or to unpack your point a little bit more, is understanding counts and understanding situations. So where's the miss zone in an 0-0 count? And then where's the miss zone in an 0-0 count to the three-hole hitter with a runner on second and third and one out?
Absolutely.
You know, like, that's a big part of it too, because guys, they'll be throwing a bullpen and they'll throw a bad slider that they don't like, and, oh, that's a home run. I was like, maybe not. It's an 0-0 strike to the eight-hole hitter, and you just showed a different pitch type, and you're in a good spot. Maybe it is an 0-0 slider to the three-hole hitter, and he hit it 450 feet, maybe. But if there's not a count and a situation to what you're doing, you can't evaluate that maturely.
Yeah, look, we give way too much credit to the hitters, right? Like, the good ones fail 7 out of 10 times. The odds are in our favor. And when you're getting them to two strikes, like you just mentioned, they're not even doing 7 out of 10. It becomes more like 8.5 out of 10, right? Like,
no doubt.
Just pound the zone, and the odds are gonna stay in your favor if you have decent stuff, right? I love all the stuff you're talking about. We're going to wrap up with just a little quick, who y'all opening up with?
We're going down to Wake Forest tomorrow. We have a tournament with Ryder on Friday, Lafayette Saturday, and then Wake Forest on Sunday.
Nice. I know the expectations are high for the season, so good luck this weekend and good luck throughout the year. And I appreciate you coming on, man. I look forward to talking to you more.
I appreciate it. Are you going to bring those boys to some of the games?
I'll try. Awesome. I can't make any promises there.
Fair enough. All right, well, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yep, and go Rams.
That's right.
Thanks for listening to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. I need y'all to do me a favor. Go check out all the social media accounts. It's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Mazingo Baseball. The website's MazingoBaseball.com. And be sure to check out the e-guide I wrote called Young Guns. It's a 90-page e-guide dedicated to pitching development from the youth levels all the way through. It's got a ton of supplemental videos that come along with it, including the Ground Force video series. And if you feel up to it, leave me a comment. Let me know what you think of the show.